Its current state on WKAR, the response to comments by Republican National Committeeman Dave Ajima of Michigan has intensified in recent days. Ajima's remarks critical of gays and Muslims triggered rebukes from across the political spectrum and has especially embarrassed his fellow Republicans. Last Sunday, 3 days after Michigan Governor Rick Snyder made a veiled reference to Ajima by calling for greater civility in his State of the State address, an influential Michigan Republican called him out by name in a column written by our next guest. A former chairman of the Michigan Republican Party, Betsy DeVos, railed against Ajima's comments for their intolerance and insensitivity, and she said he should resign his position. In its lead editorial yesterday, the paper agreed. Nolan Finley is the editorial page editor of the Detroit News. Nolan, welcome to Current State.
Good morning, Mark. Good to be with you.
What can you tell us? Can you tell us any more about the fallout from both of these columns, the response to these columns?
Well, the opposition to Ajima seems to be growing. The calls for his resignation are now increasing. You had 3 members of the congressional delegation asking him to resign at the meeting today in Washington, the RNC meeting. I don't know how he survives this. He is elected to represent a party, and when the leaders of that party feel like he can no longer do so effectively, I don't know how he survives. I just don't see how he gets through this.
Talk to us about the Republican response to this controversy. The mainstream appears to be calling for his resignation.
Absolutely, and you know there's been some discomfort with Ajima for quite some time now, based on his really vitriolic Facebook postings about gays and gay rights and what have you. I mean, they went beyond just the idea of opposition to gay marriage or opposition to gay rights. They went right to really hateful comments about the nature of homosexuality, etc.
How are your readers responding to your column from last Sunday and your column yesterday calling for him to resign?
Well, I mean, it's mixed. You have a lot of folks who were waiting for someone like Betsy DeVos to take the lead on this and have joined in the call. And then you have a lot of people who support Ajima still and who believe he is speaking the truth and should be allowed to speak. So I wouldn't say it's 100% of the folks in opposition by any means.
Did Betsy DeVos's criticism surprise you?
I'm not so sure. It surprised me. I mean, I think a lot of people hold those views. What it did was, what surprised me, I guess, was her willingness to take the lead on this. And, you know, the bosses have always been a little bit associated with the religious right. And I think that, she took a risk here in turning off perhaps some of her own base. But I think in talking to her, I get the feeling that this was very much a matter of conscience with her and that she didn't feel like she could stay silent any longer.
Some cynics complain that this is more about winning elections than a heartfelt expression of tolerance and inclusion. What do you think?
I think it's probably a little of both. I mean, politics is always about winning elections, so I don't think there's anything unique about that this time. I just don't think that was the case in for Betsy. I just got the real feeling that she was concerned that her party was being led too far to the extreme, too far outside the mainstream, and that the party leadership was too weak in standing up to this movement. And, yeah, I think she is worried that the party's future is at risk.
We're talking with Nolan Finley, who's the editorial page editor of the Detroit News. Besides party affiliation, how much history do the DeVos's and Dave Ajima share? Do you know? I mean, does this mark a split, or has there been tension in the past?
I don't know. I really don't know about the relationship. I wouldn't speculate. You know, they're both from the Grand Rapids area, but that's all I know in terms of their commonality.
Okay.
Well, Betsy herself is a former National Committee woman. She's done this job. She knows how this job should be done, and I think she was really upset, concerned that Dave wasn't doing the job the way it should be done. You're there to help the party to broaden its appeal, not to shut the door, not to make yourself the center of attention, and not to do the party harm.
What do you make of Governor Snyder's apparent reluctance to explicitly address Mr. Ajima's comments?
Well, I wish he would speak a little more clearly on it. He has twice now, once yesterday, once in the State of the State, made comments that were clearly aimed at Ajima. I don't know what he's waiting for. He had Candace Miller, Justin Amash, other noted party leaders putting their, you know, position out there. And if he feels this way, if he feels he's hurting the party, and if he feels that he has brought incivility to the political dialogue, then he should name names.
I'd like to ask you a few questions involving Brooks Patterson as well. He's been in the news, of course, for his most recent comments about Detroit, as reported in The New Yorker. The article says he acknowledges being a Detroit basher and compared the city to an Indian reservation, among other things. What do you make of all this?
Well, I mean, I know Brooks, and I know, you know, how he speaks. I also know what he does, and you know, for him to say, I'm a Detroit basher, if you put that in context, every time he offers a criticism of the way things are working in Detroit, he's called a Detroit basher. He draws that sort of lightning. And I also know he speaks sort of unfiltered. So I can imagine somebody coming in here who didn't know him and was looking to do what apparently this reporter was looking to do as a real hatchet job on a conservative Republican. You know, it's a field day because he is unfiltered. But I took a look yesterday at the things he said, and I didn't find, you know, the Detroit bashing, the racism, et cetera, that perhaps some others found in them. You know, he talked, much was made about the fact that when his children come down for a Tiger game, he warns them, don't stop at a gas station in Detroit. Well, I'll tell you, when Shalonda Buckman, the education activist, had her car hijacked at gunpoint on Jefferson Avenue, one of the city's main thoroughfares, last fall, a lot of people were saying that same thing. Black, white, suburban Detroit, didn't matter. A lot of people were saying that same thing. Brooks' problem is he says things, you know, the things everybody else says between each other, he says in, you know, in public and in front of a microphone. And as for his reservation comment, when this was a comment he made many years ago, and he was asked about it, whether, you know, he still felt that you know, Detroit was the equivalent of an Indian reservation. Well, I would defy anyone to get out of downtown, get off the freeways, drive through those neighborhoods, and tell me that they don't see large stretches of wasteland where the population is almost entirely dependent on the government and trapped in a geographic area with no hope of getting out, no commerce, no jobs. I believe that's what Brooks was referring to, and it's hard to fault the facts of what he said. The way he said it perhaps was not as politic as it should be, but what he said was not untrue.
But could, Nolan, could some number of Republicans benefit, could the larger party benefit by having key members of the party choose their words more carefully?
Well, I think that's any political party could. You know, Republicans tend to get much more scrutiny from the media when they have people say things that are outrageous. But, you have Democrats every day all over the country saying really, really odd things about the country and its values and its people. And, you know, nobody pays any attention. It just gets blown by. So, yeah, they need to be extra cautious because they're getting extra scrutiny.
Yeah, you make a good point. I mean, there's always some degree of tension within political parties. But recently, the GOP has seen more than its share. In the end, how divided is the GOP right now?
I think no more divided than any other political party at any time. I think that's overblown. You look at the Democratic Party in Michigan, the last gubernatorial election, and tell me that wasn't a divided party, where you had the unions forcing Virge Bonaro on in as the nominee and doing everything they could to defeat Andy Dillon. You had that tension between union and non-union Democrats. I think there's always that sort of attention in the party. Again, I think Republicans are getting far more scrutiny by the media, and they tend to do that. But I don't think it's all that extraordinarily unusual. And I predict it's going to be a very good year for Republicans, primarily because Democrats have handed them this very damaging Obamacare issue.
You are not alone. There are quite a few analysts who still think, at least in Michigan, that Governor Snyder and the Republicans have a good chance of prevailing come November. What else besides, now you alluded to the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, what else might be in play there?
In Michigan?
Yeah.
I think the improving economy is going to be in play in Michigan. It's hard for me to see that a incumbent governor gets beat at a time when the economy is improving and growing. I don't care which party you're in. It's hard for an incumbent governor here to get beat, even when the opposite's true, as we saw with Jennifer Granholm's reelection. I think Governor Snyder's going to win and win large. The Democrats seem to be a little dissatisfied again with their nominee. I think that's going to help down the ticket. I think it's going to help Terry Lynn Land. Remember the popular wisdom on Terry Lynn Land when she got in the race was, oh gosh, we got to find somebody other than Terry. Terry can't win. And you look at these polls, and she's consistently either even or slightly ahead of Gary Peters in the Senate race. I'm not sure the people judged her correctly when she got in the race.
Back in 2010, Governor Snyder criticized unregulated anonymous contributions for issue ads, but recently, as you know, he ended up signing a measure that preserves anonymity of supporters of issue ads. What do you make of that shift?
Well, he's a politician now, not a candidate. You find me a single politician who doesn't have those sort of contradictions on their record after they take office. I can't think of one.
Are contributions to issue ads generating much discussion within the party? Is it causing tension in the GOP, do you think?
No, I don't think it's causing tension within the party. And certainly, I don't think it's caught the attention of voters. I'm not sure that's going to be an issue that drives the election. And, we thought back in 2012 that right to work would be one of those issues that where it was in big play in the election. That doesn't seem to be catching fire either. So I think this is all going to be all about jobs and all about the burden imposed by Obamacare.
Were you surprised by Bob King's recent courtship of Gretchen Whitmer to run for governor instead of Mark Schauer?
Well, I wasn't surprised by his sort of having second thoughts about Mark Schauer, whom the UAW encouraged to run. I'm a little surprised that it was Gretchen Whitmer that he went to court. I mean, the Democrats lost big time with one angry candidate 4 years ago. I see her as just being another version of Virge Bonaro, somebody who screams a lot and gets mad a lot but doesn't offer much in the way of solutions.
We opened the show with information regarding the budget surpluses that so many states across the country enjoy. Michigan is, of course, one of those. The budget surplus in California, $3.2 billion. I've got to ask you while we've got you on the phone, what you think is going to happen with that surplus?
Well, you know, there'll be $10 billion worth of ideas for spending $1 billion of surplus. That's the way it always is. Danger of a surplus is it's used to expand the government when we're not certain whether or not it's going to be a permanent surplus or not. That's how government gets in trouble. That's how it grows beyond its means. I think as long as you have Michigan roads in the condition they're in, you can't even consider this a surplus. This is money that's fortunately come our way to deal with our infrastructure obligations. We can't keep ignoring our responsibility to fix our roads and maintain our bridges, maintain the avenues of commerce in this state. I believe that's what the money should be used for, and it should be used for that as long as it keeps coming. These ideas of giving everybody a $10, $20, $30 a year, $50 a year tax break, I just think it's not as effective and not as effective an economic driver as fixing our roads. I don't know how they are in Lansing, but I'll tell you, down here, it's like driving on a rural farm rutted road.
Nolan Finley is the editorial page editor of the Detroit News. Nolan, we appreciate the time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it. Bye.